Ballpark Road Trip. If you're listening to this podcast, you like ballparks, or you're planning on visiting a ballpark sometime in the future. Well, you've come to the right place. Here on the show, we will be traveling around to each major league city, talking to locals who know their home ballparks inside and out. Hello and welcome to Ballpark Road Trip. I'm your host, Jacob Russell Snyder, and today is our season one finale. We've made it all the way to the end of season one. We're going to do something a little different today. Instead of talking to a local fan about their home ballpark, I would like to share with you an interview that I recorded with author Paul Goldberg about his book, Ballpark, Baseball in the American City. I have had a lot of fun this season talking to people from all over the United States, meeting a lot of new baseball fans and cool folks, and I can't wait to talk to more people. We are always looking for future guests, and season two is going to start with Coors Field, Petco Park, and then we'll continue with the two New York parks and Nationals Park. We also have to get to Miami, Minnesota, Toronto, Cleveland, and much more. So if you or someone you know would be a great local expert for us, please reach out at tourswithjacob@gmail.com. We're just looking for super fans, ballpark employees, or stadium experts to come and join us on our program. So once again, please reach out. Let me know if you are interested at tourswithjacob@gmail.com. Now, if you have listened to our show before and you heard an episode and you feel like we forgot to mention something, maybe about your local park or maybe something you as a visitor encountered when you went that you think other people should know about, we are more than happy to hear your suggestions. So please go to your mobile phone, go to the voice recorder app, and record a suggestion for us. Tell us your name, where you are, and what you think we should do, see, eat, or whatever at the ballpark. I would love to have a show where we play people's suggestions and recommendations. So once again, send that voice memo to tourswithjacob@gmail.com. Things have changed a lot since I was a kid. Nowadays, with the invention of the internet, if you're a ballpark junkie like I am, there are literally hundreds of places to get pictures, videos, and information on ballparks and stadiums all over the world. I'm personally a big fan of the website Stadium Journey and ballparkreviews.com, as well as the social media account MLB Cathedrals. But when I was a kid growing up in the 80s with no internet, I would have to be creative about how I got to see pictures of MLB stadiums. Whenever somebody I knew went out of town, I would ask them to bring me back a postcard of the stadium from the airport. Whenever we went to a bookstore, I would go straight to the coffee table book section, find those big above a city books, you know, above Chicago, above New York, and try to find the picture of the ballpark, stadium, or arena. For my 10th birthday, my parents bought me a poster for my room with all 30 MLB ballparks. This included the brand new Sky Dome, but was too early for Camden Yards. I looked at that poster daily. I mean, I did other stuff as well. I wasn't just like sitting staring at a wall the whole time. But I definitely studied that poster and could tell you all the names of all the ballparks. But as I grew up, I also started collecting books about ballparks. I'd say the first one that taught me a lot about baseball stadiums and all their history was the Green Cathedrals book. Great facts and figures about every ballpark in every city that has a team. Green Cathedrals was my very first. Lost Ballparks by Lawrence S. Ritter is another good one for pictures of classic ballparks from yesteryear. And Take Me Out to the Ballpark is a great coffee table ballpark book filled with pictures of the modern 30 MLB parks. But in the summer of 2020, during COVID, I was gifted Paul Goldberg's Ballpark, Baseball in the American City, and I had a new favorite ballpark book. I read this book cover to cover and learned so much. When I started doing this podcast, I knew I wanted to have Paul on to talk about his book, and luckily for me and you, he agreed. Yeah, you were definitely someone I wanted to have on my podcast because I read your book. I guess it was a COVID 2020 present for me where I was stuck in my house and someone gave it to me. And
came out just before COVID. So, yes, we probably the sales were helped by COVID.
Oh, good. Well, yeah. I'm happy to hear that for you. Your book, of course, is called Ballparks. Baseball in the American City. I'm looking at your list of books that you've written, and I'm seeing titles like The City Observed, New York, A Guide to the Architecture of Manhattan, Why Architecture Matters, Building Up and Tearing Down, Reflections on the Age of Architecture. Why go towards ballparks as your next book, as you were deciding what to write?
I love baseball and I love architecture. So there's something sort of natural about where they intersect. And ballparks are an architectural story that I think is far more interesting than any other sports venue. You know, football, baseball, hockey, those are, some of those places are definitely better than others. But they don't have as rich a history. They don't vary in the same way as ballparks do. And they don't tell you another story along the way. What I realized at a certain point a few years ago was that there's so much history in ballparks, and it kind of parallels the whole history of how we've looked at cities in this country. We began... I think feeling very much that they were home for a lot of people and everything was kind of tightly woven together, and ballparks grew out of neighborhoods, were very connected to their neighborhoods. And then they got kind of bigger and grander as other things got bigger and grander. And then after World War II, as so many people were leaving the city for the suburbs, so did baseball. And ballparks became often suburban things built away from the center of cities and, sitting in a sea of asphalt for parking and no longer kind of connected that way. Then came what I think was the sort of great revolution, which was Camden Yards, the Baltimore Orioles ballpark that opened in 1992. When they made a decision to go back into the city and build a ballpark that would connect to the city in the same sort of way that the old ones had, and really be a part of a functioning city. And while you can still, of course, go there by car, everything isn't built around the automobile. And Camden Yards really changed everything. That's a big part of the story of the book, is how suddenly everything was different. And from then onward, everybody tried to do something more or less like that, varying degrees of success. Some are better than others. But suddenly the idea of building a concrete donut in the middle of acres of asphalt parking was no longer acceptable even. And another thing went along with that that was really important, I think, too, which is that most of those concrete donuts were built out of a misguided belief that you could play football and baseball in the same place. Well, you could, but you do it to the diminishment of both sports, because in fact, they really function best in places that are built specifically for them. And when you try to do them both in the same place, you're never going to have either the best baseball park or the best football stadium. And Camden Yards wasn't the only post-war stadium to be baseball only, but It did come after a period when we were doing a huge number of baseball and football combinations, none of which anyone really likes anymore. There's only one of them still operating in the country, Coliseum in Oakland, and that the days are numbered for that. That I think is widely understood to be not a very successful place to play ball. There are some people who have a nostalgic connection to it because they've been there. The Oakland A's had been there for so long, and they, although despite the fact that they're about to move, were a team deeply entrenched in its community. But that's a different matter. So anyway.
We can talk as much about that matter because you're joining me. I'm in Oakland right now, so that's where I'm joining you from.
Ah,
So,
okay. So
in
you know this story, probably aspects of it far more than I do, but.
well, in fact, I do believe that my whole fascination with ballparks comes from being a fan at the Oakland Coliseum. Even in 1987, I knew that my home ballpark did not have a facade that was interesting to look at. I would see pictures of old Comiskey and even Tiger Stadium and Fenway, and I'd be, just amazed and entranced by what those ballparks could be. So I've kind of started a journey, and I think it goes back to, oh, my home ballpark was kind of lacking. That doesn't mean I don't love going to games there, and what you said about community is absolutely true. But let's talk just for a second, just to let people know who aren't familiar with your book yet. And again, I believe this is a book that for anyone who's interested in ballparks, this is definitely a must read. My first book that I read about ballparks way back in the 80s was a book called Green Cathedrals, and it set itself up going through each city and going through all the ballparks in that city and all these fun little facts about the players, about things that have happened. That's not what your book is all about.
No,
How is your ballpark,
no.
or how's your ballpark book laid out?
Sure. But I know and like Green Cathedrals, by the way. It was a really helpful resource for me. No, I realize there are books, there's Green Cathedrals, and there are a couple of others like it. There are also books that are guides to going to ballparks if you are one of those crazy, wonderful people who wants to go to see all of them. This is what to look at. This is where you can eat. This is what you can do, so forth and so on. I didn't want to write either of those kinds of books. I'm a person who loves cities. I'm an architecture critic and writer about architecture and buildings. What interests me most has always been not buildings as pure objects, but how they relate to life and how they relate to the rest of life and how they, shape us and so forth. So, and when I realized how much ballparks have this huge arc of history that really tracks the whole way in which we as Americans have treated our cities, and you can ballparks are a mirror for the whole relationship of Americans to cities, and there's a relationship between baseball and cities. It's an interesting kind of paradox because, of course, we think of the field itself as this perfect image of paradise, which it is, and of rural perfection, of the Garden of Eden, and what have you. There are many, many metaphors that writers have used over the years. But it was kind of enclosed within this structure that was very much part of the city. And in fact, that magic of walking from a city street into this thing and often through a tunnel or whatever, then you come out onto this place where the grass is greener than you have ever seen it in your life. And everything seems to have this magical glow. I remember that very vividly. Actually, it was the old Yankee Stadium was the first ballpark as a kid that I was taken to. And I will always remember that first look at that grass and how vivid and alive and intense it felt. And I grew up, I did not grow up as a city kid. I grew up in the suburbs, so lawns were pretty commonplace to me, but I'd never seen one like this. And somehow the fact that it was in the middle of the city, in this great, beautiful structure that was sort of woven into the city, because cities are kind of networks and places of interconnection, and I began to think, oh, not then, I was just a kid, but later, as I remembered that and was writing an article about the new Yankee Stadium and the new Citi Field, both of which opened in 2009. Only time, by the way, in history that two major league ballparks have opened in the same city in the same year. And writing about them, I realized how much history there was and how the history of both of these places tied itself into the history of New York City. And then I began to realize, well, that's really probably true all over the place, that there's a history of Boston, there's a history of Chicago, there's a history of all these cities that baseball is an intimate part of. And you can see somehow by where they built the ballpark and why and what it was like and so forth, an awful lot about that city and what it wanted and what it aspired to and so forth. So that was one thing that really kind of brought me into this, and I wanted this book to tell that story. So it's a chronological story. It's not geographical, it's by time moving forward, but it covers, I think if I'm correct, every major league ballpark is mentioned, but depending on how important they are to the sort of larger story of this whole wonderful thing that we call ballparks, they get anything from a couple of pages to, a whole chapter just on that ballpark. I mean, Camden Yards is definitely, its own long and important chapter, but so are many others. And so I really, I want it was the big overall story that was the thing. I realized that again, for all the wonderful books that have been written about ballparks over the years, nobody's tried to pull it together into kind of a single narrative. And that was what I was trying to do, really. So.
So because of that kind of single narrative, historical context, there's a lot of people who like to rank ballparks. Do you find it less, either more difficult or less advantageous to give these ballparks rankings because they appeared at a specific time period with a
Right.
specific need for their city?
I think that's well said. I'm not that interested in rankings, although some are definitely a lot better than others. And if you read when you read the book, as you have, you'll see that I like some and don't like others so much. But trying to give them a precise ranking, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, whatever, never seemed to me to be much point. First, some of the best are gone anyway. One thing that's always been a huge sadness for me is that I never got to see Ebbets Field, which I like to think I would have liked best of all, but who knows, maybe not. But I sort of imagine, I fantasize that I would have liked it best of all, and Shibe in Philadelphia as well. So I'll never see those. So missed my chance. And so that's certainly one reason. Another reason.
Do you find that there's still use for those the multi-purpose phase or era that at that time it was
Well,
a good idea?
most of them really weren't very good, and we've learned since then that it was kind of a misguided thing, a false belief in efficiency. Not just the efficiency of trying to combine football and baseball in the same place, but also, there was a push at one point there for uniform dimensions. In fact, part of the magic of baseball is that there are no uniform dimensions
That's the worst thing I could think of.
except the diamond itself, of course, which is very precise, but the space of the outfield is technically infinite. And of course, it's never truly infinite because it's got to stop somewhere, but it's technically infinite. There are no rules about where you stop. In the same way that, baseball is also played technically in infinite time. We know truly no game goes on forever and days, but theoretically it could, unless the umpire says no more, that's it. There's no rule that says it stops in a particular time. And of course, it is not played against the clock. And every other major team sport has both a rigid clock and a very rigid playing field. There is, you don't go outside the, you're, it's a foul immediately if you go anywhere outside the lines of a basketball court, and or a football field. So whereas with baseball, of course, the foul is only if you're outside the diamond to the right or the left, and anything else is fair. And so that's telling that part of the story and how the origins of baseball and the origins of the baseball park sort of all work grew together, really, was something that was very important to me to be wanting to talk about. In any case, so I didn't rank them precisely. The other reason I didn't, by the way, is that it's too hard to make those decisions sometimes. I wanted to revisit both Fenway and Wrigley, both of which, of course, I knew, but in the course of researching the book, I thought it would be fun to go back to them as close in time as I could. And so I found a time in the schedule where there was a home game at Fenway and a home game at Wrigley the next night. And so I flew to Boston, went to that game, then got on a plane, flew to Chicago, and went to the next game. And I had a very clear sense of how those two great surviving ballparks of the golden age are different from each other. But in the end, I thought, oh, one of them will so clearly emerge as my favorite. In fact, no, I love them both. And I would have a hard time saying one was my favorite, although we did put Wrigley on the cover. But in any case, that was as much because it was just an exceptionally nice photograph that had the Chicago skyline in the back. Now, having said all that, I will also say that I think PNC in Pittsburgh is probably the best of the newer ballparks, the best of the last generation.
You talk in your book a little bit about a sense of place and kind of being able to feel where you are, like maybe in the country from being in that ballpark.
Absolutely.
I never
Totally.
really was able to put that into words, but I remember back in 2004, I went to Milwaukee, and although I didn't love the stadium, I remember having this feeling like I really feel like I'm in Wisconsin, like I'm in the north. I'm somewhere different that I haven't been before, and it really feels that way. What do you mean when you talk about this kind of sense of place with a ballpark?
Well, no, that's a great question. I mean, feeling that you're in a place not like other places, and that you're in a place that connects in some way to something distinctive about it. Again, not only are the dimensions of hockey rinks and basketball courts and soccer fields the same, and baseball fields and football fields, I mean, so is almost everything else about them. And because, at least in the case of hockey and basketball, you're indoors and you don't really have very much. The great ballparks often are open to views of the cities they're a part of. And so you're looking, beyond the outfield if you're lucky enough to have a good seat that is facing that way. And you might see some landmarks there. You might see something in the structure or the shape that's different. You remember of the in the old Yankee Stadium, although it was removed during the very ill-conceived renovation of that stadium, there was the famous scalloped cornice the top that went around like that. That was that the minute you saw a picture, you knew that picture was taken at Yankee Stadium. And it was a wonderful way to give that distinction. So all of those things, I think, are really important to sense of place, both within the design of the ballpark and making it a little different from others, and getting away from standardization. And secondly, in the connection to other things. I mean, one of the many reasons I love PNC in Pittsburgh is when you sit there, you look out at the Pittsburgh skyline, at the river, at the yellow bridges over the river that are a very characteristic Pittsburgh thing. You see all that stuff from many parts of the ballpark.
I have a couple of questions to ask you that I need to know from you as an architect, since I'm
Sure,
not an architect. And so these might be questions that might feel like from your lecture classes, from your 101 architecture classes, but bear with me for some of these.
Sure, sure, sure.
All right. So first, I loved not talking baseball, but talking football as a kid. I loved Soldier Field in Chicago. I loved these big columns, this kind of neoclassical architecture. I thought that was really cool. Tell me why that would have been a bad idea in Washington, D.C. for Nationals Park. And is there anything else you can tell me besides my wife who just said, well, that sounds tacky? Is there any other explanation for why we shouldn't have done that
No,
in
they
general
could have
architecture?
done something like that. I mean, I think that, so, I mean, Soldier Field is a little grandiose to form a model for a baseball park. I think that's the chief reason. Because, football is kind of, is bigger, more powerful, almost more militaristic. Baseball's always been kind of a little more friendly and low key. And I think baseball parks reflect that. And, baseball parks are better when they're not humongous. Football stadiums actually somehow seem better and more exciting when they're enormous. So that's one reason. But you could have done something in Washington that picked up on that. One of I think the issue really has nothing less to do with sports and more to do with the fact that we don't really we do occasionally some things with classical columns today, and certainly Washington has plenty of them, but architecture's kind of moved beyond that, and sometimes it appears a little too tired and conservative and not fresh enough. I think that would be the chief argument against it. I think an architect could do a baseball park with columns if he or she wanted to, and could be, it could make it look not like Soldier Field, but like something a little friendlier and more accessible.
Let's stick with Nationals Park for a moment because this kind of goes to another question I have. When I was a kid, I remember looking at ballparks like Fenway and Old Comiskey and even Shibe Park and thinking that I really liked the facades because they didn't look like stadiums. They looked kind of like municipal buildings.
I
And
agree.
now I look at Nationals Park, maybe even Globe Life in Texas, and I say, I don't like these because they don't look like ballparks. They look like municipal buildings, boring municipal buildings. So, what has changed? Is it me? Would I have thought that those buildings back then were boring municipal buildings back in the
Maybe,
1910s?
maybe. Hard to know, but I think it's you who's changed more, probably. I mean, I thought, I'm not sure I would want to say municipal buildings because that often doesn't necessarily give you the association you want with the very best architecture, because sometimes municipal buildings are pretty bad. But I think your notion that something like Shibe Park made you think of, let's just say, a building that was not a stadium. It didn't immediately say stadium. It did say some kind of civic building, some kind of grand civic building. That was a thing I always liked about them too, because it also had to do with this idea of connection. It helped it fit into the cityscape. and it felt like it was a part of the city. And I think that in the case of National, I think National Stadium is actually trying to do that just with modern architecture, and the architecture isn't really as good as it could be, and so forth and so on. I mean, I think those are the problems, so far as I see it. Not that not that it's trying to fit in. I sort of like the way it has that kind of flat facade on the street that sort of fits into some of the other stuff around it. I just wish it were a little better and more interesting in its own right than it is. But what it's trying to do, I don't think, is a mistake. It's trying to blend in, because again, it also gets you to this idea that you almost think you're just going into a building, and then wow, comes all this magic when you enter in. That the drama of that is still incredibly exciting to me.
Speaking of another kind of modern building, how do you think that Miami's ballpark is going to age? That they went ultra modern, and
Yes.
it seems like a lot of the lasting ones, even though the whole quote unquote retro movement got a little tired after a while, people still like St. Louis, people still like the ones that
Yeah.
came a little later. How do you think some of these modern ones are going to fare in 30 years?
Well, it's a really good question again. I don't know. I really like, in principle, the idea of trying to do a modern ballpark that also has the qualities that we've all believed in since Camden Yards, which is fitting into the city, not being the what I call the concrete donut sitting by itself. And I think you can do that with a modern building, but it is a little harder because modern buildings by nature tend to be more sculptural and less fitting in, usually, not always, but usually. And nobody's done it really, really well. Now, Miami's a different story. Yes, they tried very hard to be modern, but it's an enormous structure that overwhelms everything around it. It's not, particularly, I mean, of course, it's impossible to build a building like that and really fit it into anything because it's enormous. My issue with Miami, which is, I'm going to admit before I say it, a sort of stupid issue, because you couldn't have not done this. But I don't really like ballparks with roofs. On the other hand, the idea of playing in the summer in Miami without air conditioning is ridiculous. It's hard enough to fill that ballpark when, with a roof. So, I mean, it would be impossible without one. So, of course, they had to do that, and at least it's retractable. The idea of a ball playing baseball under a fixed roof, thankfully, is another bad idea that's gone away. We have only one left, which is Tropicana in St.
Well, I was
Petersburg.
going to ask, my next question was going to be, do you have any thoughts on the new A's Las Vegas renderings? That's what we're going to be getting. I don't know if you've
Yeah,
seen those too much.
I haven't really seen them. I will tell you, I liked a lot, and I got it into the book just before publication time, something that is not going to go ahead, of course, which was the Howard Terminal option when they were considering staying in Oakland. I was very excited by that, and I was very disappointed when it ultimately did not happen.
It has turned into a fixed dome on the strip, so that's
Yes,
kind of a disappointment.
and fixed domes, I think, are the I mean, look, Las Vegas is not a great climate for being out in the open weather. The number of times a dome in Las Vegas would be open is probably pretty slim, so I can understand not wanting to spend the money on a retractable when you're not going to retract it very much. But still, I don't know. I'm not excited about it. I was much more excited about the other option in Oakland, and I'm sorry for many reasons, of which that design's only one of them. that they didn't stay and be able to build at Howard Terminal.
Yeah. Well, thanks for saying that. I've got one final question
Sure,
topic, and then I'll
sure,
let you go.
sure,
But
sure.
one term that I use a lot that I believe I got from you, I don't know if you coined it yourself, but I love the term mallparks. That is a great description of our current ballpark phase that we're in. What do you mean by mallparks? And do you think we're still in that phase going forward, or have we missed
Yeah,
that?
I think we are. I mean, it's a phase that kind of follows the Camden Yards phase. It's a phase of, and like a lot of things, it has some good in it and some bad. It's definitely an attempt to get away from the old paradigm of the concrete donut in parking again. So by mall parks, I don't mean something suburban. I mean, in the same way that a mall is a kind of imitation city street with shops, the mall park is a kind of fake city environment. It's better than nothing.
Yeah.
It's better than, being out in the middle of nowhere with acres of asphalt parking around you. Definitely better than that. I mean, St. Louis is downtown, which is good. They have built this whole development around the stadium that is a kind of, slightly contrived urban environment, but in fact, it's better than not having it, and it provides a lot of places for people to go that creates, a broader experience for the ballpark, and that's good. The one I really don't like is Atlanta, because even though the ballpark itself is not bad, but they chose at a time when other teams were coming back to the city to leave Atlanta and go to Cobb County, where they bought this huge tract of land that they could develop themselves, and then what they basically did was build a little pretend city around it. So, there's a hotel and some condos and a lot of stores and bars and restaurants, and you park your car and then you kind of pretend you're in a little tiny city that's sort of make believe. Again, it's still better than the things we had in the 60s and 70s, but it's not the best of what a ballpark can be either.
Dave Cavill, the president of the A's, has said when asked what he was thinking about were his inspirations for the new Las Vegas ballpark, really said that he was inspired by globe life in Texas and all the opportunities for premium seating and group spaces. Do you think that we are in like just the total monetization era of ballparks? Is that
Oh, I
what's
think
going
we've
on
been in
now?
we I think we've been in it for a long time. I mean, we've been in it for a very long time. Professional sports, and not just baseball, all professional sports are about monetizing every possible thing you can possibly monetize. And it's been so for a long time. I mean, even Camden Yards, for all that it's described as retro, Camden Yards has all kinds of clubs and premium seating and all sorts of things that you would have never found in an older ballpark. In fact, I think, and I'm not criticizing that, I think that's just inevitable and fine. Part of the, I think, brilliance of Camden Yards is how they gave it a traditional feeling with a much bigger footprint than an older ballpark would have had, so as to fit all that stuff in,
All right.
but not make it appear to dominate the design. And a lot of it is slipped in a kind of more subtle fashion, so that unless you're going to the club, you're not aware of it, and the locker rooms are, because standards are higher now, it's not the little slum that they used to be in those
Yeah.
old ballparks and so forth. And the Cubs and the Red Sox have managed also in fairly subtle and not visible ways to alter and expand their ballparks to make them work better and offer at least, somewhat more opportunities for premium seating, for better facilities for the teams, and so forth. And that's all good. You can't begrudge them that any more than you could say, well, I believe in traditional communication, so no wireless network in this place. I mean, you
Right.
just can't do that. So, I mean, some things we just have to accept and change. And the question is, how can you do it in a way that holds on to the best of what you've had before instead of throwing it all away? Again, that's why Camden Yards was so good, because they actually, not because it really was exactly like an old stadium,
Yeah.
it's because it actually had the, what you could say, it had the program of a new stadium fit into a structure that looked like an old one.
Right.
That was actually really clever and not easily done, and it's something to be admired.
That's great. Paul, we're almost out of time. So thank you very much for joining us. I
Sure.
want to just get from you. Is there any place that you recommend is the best place to pick up your book if people want to get a hold of it?
Well, I hope they do want to get hold of it. It hopefully is in local bookstores, which I like to support, but I know it's on Amazon in any event,
Yep.
and it's called Ballpark Baseball in the American City.
Really one of my favorite books that I've written or I've
Thank you
read over
so
the past
much.
5 years. So,
I really appreciate it. Thank
yeah,
you.
thank you so much, Paul.
Great, Jacob. Thank you.
All right, everyone, that is our show, the final show for the season. We're going to go on a little hiatus, take a little break, re-up some interviews, put some shows together, maybe go to some ballparks. I definitely will do a special episode from the final game at the Coliseum. That's on September 26th. So after that, look for a special episode. I also have a couple of interviews with some guests about previous ballparks that are no longer with us. So maybe I'll release those before our next season. But yeah, season two should come out a little later, definitely before next season's baseball games, so that you will have all your ballparks ready to go out on your road trip, whether that's 2025 or in the future. So, thank you guys for listening. Please tell all your friends about this show, anyone who likes ballparks. If you would like to recommend it, feel free to recommend this wherever you want. I'm only allowed certain amount of advertisements in some of these message boards and Facebook groups and whatnot, so you're welcome to help promote this show. Thank you so much. We will be back next season. So until then, this is Jacob Russell Snyder saying thank you so much. We will be back next season.
Thank you for listening to Ballpark Road Trip. If you like what you hear, feel free to follow the show on Instagram at Tours with Jacob. If you would like to get in touch with the show, you can send us a message on Instagram or feel free to email us at tourswithjacob@gmail.com. We'd love to hear any recommendations you have for your home ballpark. You can send us an audio recording by using your voice memo app on your smartphone and emailing it to tourswithjacob@gmail.com. Please keep your suggestions and recommendations to a minute or less, but feel free to send as many as you'd like. We'll make sure to get them on the show at some point. Thanks for listening. See you next time.